The gospel reading today comes from the Gospel of John, chapter 15, beginning in verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I've said these things to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. You did not choose me, but I chose you. And I appointed you to go and bear fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. I am giving you these commandments so that you may love one another. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It sometimes doesn't feel like it, but I love to walk. Most days my pattern is to go out and put in a few miles. And I'm a walker maybe because it is the cheapest and most convenient form of exercise for me, though I recently joined a gym that cost me $10 a month, and I get angry with myself if I don't actually get my money's worth each month. But for the cost of a new pair of sneakers every 6 months or so, I can exercise pretty much anytime, any place. Walking is one of the easiest forms of exercise, both to start and to quit at the same time, and I think that you can all relate. When the morning temperature is 95 degrees with a matching degree of humidity, my air-conditioned house is very appealing. Equally, when it's 10 degrees out with black ice forming all over the place, a nice warm bedroom is a hard thing to resist. But for the most part, I try to get out and get those 10,000 steps every day. Even more so now, as my doctor seems to be a little bit of an alarmist, and he scares me to death with what the next 30 to 40 years of my life will look like. Fear tactics aside, I love to walk. I always have. If I'm visiting a city, I can walk for hours taking in the sights. I stop and I look at plaques that appear telling of some historic event that happened somewhere, or one telling of a historic figure who was born or lived in some house. And I drive my kids crazy with this. Dad, can we stop? No. Keep going. There's another statue I want to see. But Dad, we only have flip-flops on. I told you to wear sneakers. But Dad, we're tired. Can we rest? No, you can rest when you die. Have you ever lost yourself when walking? You know, I hear it happens to runners all the time. There's a rhythm that comes over a person. It happens when I walk. In my younger years, I used to hike going up and down mountains in the Adirondacks, and I would get into this rhythm. And you're walking along, and all of a sudden you emerge in a clearing, and the only thing to break up the rhythm is a beautiful scene that is too amazing to miss. And it's there that you stop and you take in all the joy and the beauty of God's creation. In my nearly 51 years, I've never run into anyone who has said that walking is a bad idea. There are certain things in our world that people generally agree are a good thing. As Christians, not one person has ever said that the Ten Commandments were a bad thing. Everybody seems to be in favor of the Ten Commandments. Church people especially like the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, for the most part, make them think like there's some ultimate statute, some supreme moral order, some virtue that is out there in our world. poll numbers for the Ten Commandments run very high. But the poll numbers drop very quickly when people are asked if they can recite or remember the Ten Commandments. Most can remember a couple, some can remember a few, and very, very few can name all of them, especially in order. If you recall, we tried this a couple of years ago, and it took a while for you all to recite them. It was kind of like a group effort. You know, we're glad to know that the Ten Commandments are out there, but in terms of putting on the shorts and sneakers, that's a different thing, isn't it? And if we don't know the Ten Commandments, how can we embrace them as a pattern of life? Now, the reason I think that this may be that we think that we have the Ten Commandments covered, the ten basic commands, even if we can't recite them, we think that we're doing pretty well with them because we think that we have got them down. Don't use the Lord's name in vain, check. Haven't committed adultery, check. Haven't murdered anyone, check. I went to church on Sunday, check. I haven't wrongly accused someone, check. I send my mother and father cards on their birthdays, check, 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 check. It's kind of like that form that you'll fill out in a couple of weeks if you give blood. You check the boxes of all the things that you've done and you haven't done. We filled out the Ten Commandment form a long time ago and we're all checked out, aren't we? And of course, when we do this, we've missed the entire point. Because what we've missed along the way is that the Ten Commandments, along with a lot of what we're called and commanded to do in the Bible, is an invitation into a deep and sustaining exercise, the outcome of which is joy. It's a deep and sustaining exercise, the outcome of which is joy. Jesus said in our scriptures this morning, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, and my love will be in you, and your joy will be complete. Somewhere in the midst of the Ten Commandments, there is joy, a joy that comes in exercising our faith. Let's think about it another way. When I was a kid, I was the youngest of three, and there was a time that I would watch my sisters ride their bicycles. And I would marvel at this when I was about 3 years old because it just didn't seem possible that I was ever going to be able to do this. I had a bike that came with training wheels, and I rode that around, and it was kind of like riding a bike, but it really wasn't riding a bike, was it? And then came the day when my dad said that the wheels have to come off, and they did. And my sisters were very eager to be there with me at that moment. I first thought that it was because they loved me, but then I realized that what they wanted to see was me crash into trees and bushes. And so for those first few times of wobbling down the sidewalk and down a driveway and into the street and falling and skinning my knee and planting my face into bark, they were terribly frightening at first. But I knew that if I kept at it, there was the joy of riding my bike if I kept going. The joy of hopping on and not giving any thought to falling over. The joy of finding my equilibrium, the balance, the sustained rhythm. That's why we learn to ride a bicycle. You know, the Gospels are filled with this conversation Jesus has with the religious leaders about bike riding, aren't they? About finding the equilibrium. About this deeper question of what lies at the depth of the law. Whether it was the Pharisees or the Sadducees or the scribes or the rich young ruler, there was this running conversation about what the point of the Ten Commandments is. Is it a checklist? Is it a list of do's and don'ts, or was it the means to joy? When the rich man approached Jesus and wanted to know about eternal life and checked off the list of commandments that he had followed, what Jesus did not see was the joy. He says, oh, it's nice that you follow all these, but you don't have any joy. You're still trudging along, half resentful of what you have to do, half worried that you're going to fall off. You don't have the rhythm, the balance, the equilibrium. And if you're more worried about obeying the law and not focused on living the law, you haven't gotten to that high yet. If you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love. My joy will be in you, and your joy will be complete. There's joy in those commandments, Jesus says. It's one thing to say that you haven't murdered anyone, and it's another thing to live your life in a way that is so filled with grace that you can know that you no longer feel compelled to say you fool to someone who disagrees with you or slips up. It's one thing to say that you haven't committed adultery. It's another when you realize the beauty of your spouse is deeper than your eyes can see. It's one thing to say that you love your neighbor, but it's another to be filled with such unexplainable thanksgiving that your cup runs over, even to your enemy. It's one thing to say that I remember the Sabbath, and it's another to turn off a football game or to resist the lure of a shopping spree and instead mark out a day to bask in the glory of God, the beginning of which is spent with your fellow church members in a worship service. There's joy in those laws. And the commandments are an invitation to take out the sneakers and shorts and to hop on the bike and to get going. Joy, C.S. Lewis says, is the business of heaven. But you know, somewhere along the way, in this maddening life, we forget about that, don't we? You know, on this World Communion Sunday, when we imagine that the world joins us at this table, and they take this same bread and cup, it would do us well to pause and ask the question of what the point is of this meal. What's the point of the font? What's the point of this book, the Bible? What's the point of the creeds and the hymns and the prayers that we have just sung and said? And the answer is, it is to get to the joy. The chief end of humankind, our forefathers and mothers said ages ago, is to glorify God and to enjoy God forever. And joy comes in being in the rhythm of God, the balance of God, the depth of God, the sustained awareness of God. I have come, Jesus says, that you might have life and have life abundantly. Denise Levertov, in her poem, Moments of Joy, imagines a scholar who has moved away from his family to the next street in order that he can focus more deeply about the world and the work that he is doing. And his children feel deeply his short distance from them, but at night the father would return and sit with his children at the end of their bed as they are still sleeping. And Levertov concludes the poem and says, "But at a time a son or daughter wakes in the dark and finds him sitting at the foot of the bed, in the old rocker sleepless, in his old coat gazing, into invisible distance, but clearly there to protect, as he has always done. The child springs up and flings arms about him, presses a cheek into his temple, taking him by surprise, and exclaims, 'Abba,' the old intimate name from the days of infancy. And the old scholar, the father, is deeply glad to be found. That's how it is, Lord, sometimes. You seek, and I find. You seek, and I find." Friends, this is where the joy begins. When we, by grace, awaken from this maddening world, when we gather together, when we discover in commandment, in meal, in the waters, in the creed, in the hymns, and in the prayers, that there is a seeking God who wants to be found, that God's joy may be in you, and that your joy may be complete. Amen.